Okay, we're continuing. We're on Daf Kuf Nun Vav today. We're continuing at Kuf Nun Hey Amud Bet, about seven lines from the bottom. If you remember, we ended up with that story about the guy who was trying to fake out, right? He had sold property. He was under 20. He wanted to get the property back, but he was a smart kid, so he was worried they were going to say, oh, the sale is a good sale. So his relatives told him, go fake out that you're really a little insane, and then, or maybe juvenile, you could say. And then the people he sold to kind of faked him out and said, yeah, why don't you go kind of negotiate on price of the shtar? And then Rebbe changed his mind and said, you know what you're doing, and therefore your sale is a good sale. So if you remember, where we ended was this concept that even though we say the age is 18 or 20 with simanim, right, we kind of have, if we want to just review, we have basically, according to the conclusion so far, 12 and a day, or 13 and a day for a boy, and any older, the sale is a good sale. If under the condition, right, this is all, by the way, okay, let's even go earlier. If you sell anything, forget, this is all your father's possessions that he left you, Yerusha, but if, like a trust fund. But if you have your own stuff, you're allowed to sell it between the, you know, once you turn 12 or 13. The only concern here is for orphans that they're not going to be smart about using their nechassim, which we're going to see more about today. So from the age of 12, 13, your sale is a good sale. However, you're not allowed to sell possessions that you inherited until you get to 18 or 20, assuming you have simanim. If you don't have simanim, then the age goes up to 36 if you never have simanim. And, or 35, some people say, I guess probably into the 36th year. We had a debate whether into the year is considered before the year or after the year, when you're 17 in a day or 19 in a day or whatever it might be. And then we saw that if you, though, you're knowledgeable about knowing how to negotiate, then we assume even from the age of 12, you can sell your, or 13 for a boy, 12 for a girl, you can sell your father's possessions that you inherited. So we're going to see some more things about this now. We're starting with Amar Rav Huna Barei Rav Yoshua. Like I said, seven lines from the bottom. Ula Edut, Eduto Edut. Okay, when it comes to Edut, we allow a 12 or 13-year-old who's reached the age, right, we allow to accept their testimony. So Amar Marzutra lo Amaran ela lemitarte le aval lemikar ke'elo. Their edu can only be edu when they're testifying about metaltalin. But since we don't allow a sale of karka, of their father's sale, therefore we don't allow them to testify about karkaot either. So Amar le Rav Ashi the Rav Marzutra is going to question him now and say, wait a minute, Maishna metaltale. Why do you say metaltale? Their edut is edut, zvine zvine, because their sale is a good sale. If they sell metaltalin, it works. Ela me'ata, according to you, what are you saying? There's a direct correlation between what they're allowed to do, sale-wise, to what they're allowed to testify about. So he says, if you want to say that, then we have a mission that says, ha'pi'utot mekha mekach umim kara memkar, b'metaltalin. Hachanam edutan edut. If you're going to make a direct correlation between someone being able to sell possessions to someone being able to testify, well then, there's a mishnah that says, I actually learned this in the past, that if a child from the age already of 5 or 6 has a concept of being able to sell, they understand the concept, therefore, right, I remember learning this before, we talked about this in the context of I brought up an example, I seem to remember, if not, I'll bring it up now. Anyway, I'll remind you, kids always trade in klafim, right? The cards, baseball cards or soccer cards or whatever it might be. And then they always complain, right? They don't realize that if they trade, right, they're never getting it back. On the other hand, at a certain point, they get that concept. They realize that once they trade a player, they're never getting that card back. So once they have that concept of a sale, which usually they say from approximately the age of 5 or 6, already they can sell metaltalin. So according to what you're saying, if they can sell metaltalin, if there's a direct correlation between selling metaltalin and testimony, then you're going to say a 5 or 6-year-old can testify. That's ridiculous. So Amalei, hatam bi'ina v'amdu shneh anashim v'leika. There's a separate reason why their edutan is an edut. It's not disqualified or qualified because it's yes, there's a direct correlation between these things. Once you're already considered Shnei Anashim. Shnei Anashim is this pasuk about Edim. So they're saying the Edim have to be Anashim. So therefore, once you're 12 or 13, then we can talk about it. And then you can testify. But then we're going to directly correlate it between what you can testify about and what you can sell. And what you can't sell is going to affect what you can testify about. But if you're underage, then for sure you can't testify, but that's for a totally different reason. Amar Amemar, umatanato matana. And his gift is a good gift. Okay, now this seems quite strange. So a yatom inherits his father's possessions. He's not allowed to sell them until he turns 18 or 20, or reaches an age where we're clear that he understands masa umatan. But before he gets to that stage, we're going to allow him to give it as a gift. Right? That seems quite odd. Amar le Rav Ashi la Amemar, hashta umazvini de makabel zuze amar de lo. Right? What you said his sale is not a good sale. Now why? Dilma, what are we worried about? Why won't we let his sale be a good sale? What does Rav Ashi assume? Dilma mozil umazvin. We're worried that he's going to get taken advantage of. Well, how do you get taken advantage of? They're going to be, right, mozil. The price, you're going to pay too low a price. People are going to, you know, cheat you out of your money. That's the assumption. They were worried about the Yatom getting cheated out of his money. So kol shekem matana de lamata le velomidi. Well, the more so, if he gives a gift, he's getting nothing for it. In other words, what's the assumption? The assumption is that we're worried that people are going to take advantage of him. Okay? But that's the issue. The issue is taking advantage. So if we're worried about that, then all the more so we should be worried if this kid gives away his stuff as a gift, for sure he's getting taken advantage of. So, comes his retort. What does Amemar say? Amemar has to support why he said his matana to his matana. Amar le, vilit amech, according to what you're saying, if all we're worried about is someone getting taken advantage of, then what's our concern? Then according to what you're saying, let's say the case was like this. Zavin shave chamisha b'shita. Hachanami dizvine zvine. If you want to say that the whole issue is that you're getting the yatom we're getting taken advantage of, what if they want to sell property that's worth five and they sell it for six? What if they're actually making money off of it? You're going to say then it's allowed? In other words, no one distinguished between whether they're getting underpaid or overpaid. So Ella, therefore, that's not the issue. Ella kim lehu d'rabanan d'yanuka mekarva date gabezuze. The rabbis understood that what? Kids are a little greedy for money. They like money. So what are they concerned about? V'iyamar zvine zvine, if we say their sale is a good sale, zimnin demakarka shele zuze, someone will wave money in their faces, say, oh, look at what I'll offer you. It's like people giving candies to kids, right? They'll grab it. So what are we worried about? They're going to wave money in their faces. Azil mazbin lekulu nichse davua, he's going to go sell all of his father's possessions in order to get the cash, okay, which we obviously don't want to do. In other words, we're worried, even if he gets a good price, we're not worried about him getting taken advantage of. We're worried about the money being such a lure that he's going to end up selling all the possessions and end up with no karka. Remember, in those days, we talked about this a few days ago, right? Even Judy, you wrote me about it, something after, about, you know, that people didn't want cash in those days. It wasn't a good thing to have lots of cash. They wanted to have property. Whereas nowadays, with banks and other things, you know, money's not as bad a thing. Anyway, aval legabe matana, but why do I think, based on that logic, that matana is okay? First of all, he's not getting any cash for it, right? So it's not, it doesn't fall into that category of they're going to lure him away with money, lure him to sell everything. E lav dahave lehana mine, lo havayav le matana. Here's a great assumption. Why do people give gifts? Because they know that there's something in it for them. They're going to get, the child wouldn't give the land away if there wasn't some ulterior motive that he had. Okay? And therefore, adio lo havalim hana mine lo v'yav le matana. And therefore, amru rabbanan tehavi matanto matana dila avide luhu mile. We want people to do nice things for the atonement. So what do we say? Well, allow the atonement to give gifts to people, because we know that in exchange of receiving the gift, those people will do nice things for the atonement and help take care of them. So therefore, we allow matana. Okay? So again, is the concern they're going to get taken advantage of, and people are going to give them a lower price. That's what Rav Ashi thinks. And therefore, matana is for sure no good. A Maimar thinks, no, matana is okay, because our concern is that they're going to try to sell everything for cash. In the case of a matana, there's no issue of cash. And therefore, there must be some ulterior motive why he would be giving the matana, and it must be because he's going to receive some benefit. And therefore, we allow the child to receive, you know, we want the yatom to receive those benefits. Therefore, we're going to allow it. Yeah.
It seems like much more dangerous than taking money, because, you know, a desperate orphan for food, or just to have somebody be nice to him.
He's going to give away his possessions, right. It does seem a little odd. So it's interesting. If you look in the Rashbam, he says, "Dila'avdin mile," right? The people will do nice things. Ligmolo chesed uleheitivlo bechol inyanim. He adds the words bechol inyanim, that there's an assumption that he gives this gift to someone, and in exchange, they're going to help him with everything. And that the Rashbam, I think, is relating a little bit to what Shari's concerned about. It's not just to help him with a little bit of something, I'll give him food one day, but that in exchange for this gift, the person will be indebted to him for everything, so that he'll get taken care of. Mm-hmm. That's the assumption, that we want to create this, almost like a father figure. And how's he going to, so to speak, buy himself a father figure? He's going to give the person a gift, and they'll become the father figure for him. Bechol inyanim, right? Which clearly, the text didn't say that, but the Rashbam is probably adding it, because otherwise, you're right, it doesn't make so much sense.
It would be nice if people were nice to orphans, though, just
to clock. It would be nice if people were nice to orphans. Not just for the reason that the orphan's giving him a gift. But we know that people feel differently when they feel indebted to someone. In other words, it's like anything. People will do chasadim for people, but usually it ends at a certain point. Obviously, in an ideal world, it shouldn't. But, you know, especially someone dies, so for the first year, they'll be taken care of, but you want someone who's going to feel indebted for the long term and not just for the short term. So in order for that to happen, there has to be some sort of benefit for that person to feel that commitment. Again, hopefully you can find people who will do it with that. But here you see that certainly the atonement were smart enough to want to ensure that. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel. Now we're moving on to a different issue. Bodkin, if we were talking about Shesarot and checking Simanim, so for what things are we Bodkin? Lekidushin, Legerushin, Ulechalitza, Ulemiunim, Ulemkor b'nechse aviv, Ad she ben esrim. Okay, all these other things except for the Nechse Aviv are obviously at the age of 12 or 13, right? So we check to see. In order to have Bagrut, right, you need Simanim and age. So in order to get married, you have to be of age. Gerushin, in order to get divorced, you also need to be. Chalitza, in order, right, if you're supposed to do Yibum and the brother doesn't want to do Yibum with you, so you do Chalitza. If you remember, with Yibum, the age is earlier, because Yibum, you have to just be Ra'oy Lebi'ah, because Yibum is done through Bia. So for a girl, it's 3 years already, and for a boy, it's 9 years and a day for both of them. Ulemiunin, we've seen this many times, that's when a girl is an orphan, her father's not alive, her mother or her brother are alive, they take care of her. They marry her off, because remember, if the father marries her off, it's d'oraita. If they marry her off, it's only a marriage d'rabbanan. And she has rights until she gets of age, and this is what we're going to discuss, what age exactly, but the assumption here is 12 and simanim, shtei sa'arot, that she can say until that age she's allowed to say, I don't want to be with this man. And then she doesn't need divorce, she doesn't need anything, it's as if they were never married. And the final one is our case, which is limkor b'nechse aviv, ad she ben esrim, right? In order to sell his father's possessions at the age of 20, he needs 20 and simanim.
Yeah. Say marriage and divorce,
because divorce comes after marriage. That's exactly the Gemara's question. Kevan de badachna lekidushin, legerushin lamali. If we already checked her for kidushin or him for kidushin, then legerushin, what do you need it for, right? The assumption here is, by the way, we're talking about both the boy and the girl need to be checked. So what do they answer? Lo nitzracha ela liyibum. Ditnan ben tesha shani v'yom achad shabal yivimto kna'a ve'ein noten get ad sheyigdal. The case of gerushin that they mentioned here, obviously if you were married, then we know that you're of age. So it's only in a case where there was yibum, and then they want to get divorced after yibum. Once you do yibum, you're, for all intents and purposes, married. So you need divorce to get out of it. So if they did yibum when he was only 9, and he didn't need simanim. Then when he gets to the age of 13, you know, we basically have to wait until he's the age of 13 in order to give a get. Now we're going to talk about l'chalitza. L'chalitza, they're going to say that Rav Nachman said in the name of Shmuel that you need to check for chalitza. This is l'afuke mi de Rabbi Yossi. He's saying this to tell you that he disagrees with Rabbi Yossi. Damar ish katub parsha, avalisha ben gdola ben ktana. Kamash malan de makshin an ish lisha de lo ki Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi had a shita. It says in the pasuk, the pasuk isn't mentioned here. I'm too bad. Okay. The pasuk is, I'm blanking on what it is. 1 second. Let me just find it. Maybe it says it in the Rashbam here. Doesn't say it there. Okay, fine. Im lo yachpot ha'ish lekachta. Okay, lekachat et yivimto, right? So it calls him the ish, and it calls her the yivimta. Right? So because it says ish, ish means a gadol. But yivimta could be anyone. So what do they learn from here? Rabbi Yossi says that isha ben gdola ben ktana. She doesn't need to be of age for chalitza. Okay? So that's the case, right? Im lo yachpotza ish, meaning if he doesn't want to marry the yivimta, then they do chalitza. That pasuk mentions him as an ish and her as yivimta. So therefore, in yivimta, we already learned, you could do it at a younger age. So therefore, they assume chalitza has to be, he has to be of age, not her. That's Rabbi Yossi. But our statement by Shmuel is obviously disagreeing with that, because he's, by the way, it doesn't say this, but it says, bodkim for all these things, the assumption is he's talking about both the male and the female. Okay, so therefore, it's delo ka Rabbi Yossi. What?
She would have had to be married before doing because the whole thing was that she was the widow.
So you're saying, how could she have been married if she wasn't of age? That's a good point.
Unless she was new.
Right, she could have been married off by her father. That's right. She could have been married off by her father. When we talk about Kiddushin, it only means she's doing it herself. But she could have definitely been married by her father at a young age, then gotten into the situation that she needs to do Yibum.
Okay, but that also then passed to Grushin, to the first question.
Why does she have to mention Roshin if you know that Kedushin, you can't do it.
Why?
If she was married by her father before.
If she was married by her father before, she wouldn't have needed to check Simanim, right, and now she needs Chalitza. So now Grusha. You need to check Simanim.
Right. No, the whole point is just the first question that Mara raised, why do you separately have to mention Grusha?
They could have said about Chalitza.
They could have said about married off by her father.
They could have answered her being divorced. Right. So there they were focusing on the man. The question was on the man. If the man needs to be checked, he needs to be of age because he can't be married off by anybody else. So there the question was on the man. And now that, right, okay. So now Shmuel basically says, since it says ish, makshinan ish li isha. Isha l'ish, sorry. We compare the woman to the man. Just like he needs to be an ish, she also needs to be an isha for chalitza, even though it doesn't say so in the pasuk. And therefore, we show that Shmuel disagrees with Rabbi Yossi. Okay, the same thing for the next one. L'miunim, lafukeh midu Rabbi Yehuda. He says this statement to basically say that I disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. These, by the way, are all tana'im. Shmuel's an emora. So we're saying that Shmuel had a different approach to these specific tana'im. He didn't agree with them. Rabbi Yehuda said, "De'amar ad shir besh shachor, kamash malan de lo ke Rabbi Yehuda." He says, "For miun, you need what's your besh shachor." So there's a few different debate whether you need it's more numbers of hairs you need, where the shachor is more than you can't see your skin as much underneath, or it's that they're longer, that they grow longer. Okay, that and therefore it covers more area. Either which way, it's a later stage. And he says you can basically, what's interesting is he's more mekel about miyun. He basically allows the woman to do miyun for a longer period of time. Some people actually claim that Rabbi Yehuda says this about other things as well, not just about miyun, but it seems more likely that he's really talking about miyun. And therefore, kamash malan, deloka Rabbi Yehuda, he doesn't agree there has to be this later stage. It's actually the earlier stage. Only until the earlier stage can she do miyun. You don't have to wait ad shir, or she can't wait until ad shir besh shachor. So again, why did he make this statement? Because he wanted to say, I hold Esrim and I don't hold 18. Now we get at the end of the sugya, we're going to have a whole slew of hilchitas. okay, which are often commonly written by later, right, either the end of the Emoraim period, time period, or even maybe the end of the Sforaim, right? The Emoraim ended around 500. Sforaim added stuff to the sides of the text, which eventually got incorporated into the text, and often they're even later until 800s. There's, you know, or until about 800. There's even certain sugyot, by the way, where it says v'hilchata, and even some of the Rishonim say, like there's one case where I think the Ramban says it, that it was Rav Hai Gaon who wrote this, even in the Gaonim, which is even later. Once in a while they say, oh yeah, that was Gaonim said it, and it got put into the text. So v'hilchata tochzman kilifnezman. That into the 18th year is like before the 18th year. So when you're 17 in a day, it counts as 17, not as 18, or even 17 and a half. V'hilchata kigido bar Menashe, that if you're younger, you're allowed, if you're younger but smart, you're allowed to sell your father's possessions. V'hilchata kimarzutra, okay, let's see if we get all this straight, right? Marzutra said the mitaltale, right, that they can testify for metaltalim, but they can't testify for karkaod, right? If you have someone who's under 20, they're not allowed to testify in a case of karka because they're not allowed to sell their father's land, so therefore we don't trust them to testify about land. And Hilchata Ke'amemar, who said matanato matana, right? Even though he's not allowed to sell, he is allowed to give it as a gift. And Hilchata Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel Bekulhu. And in all those things where we showed that Shmuel disagreed with various Tanaim about Chalitza, about Miun, about right the age for all these things, he basically says that we paskin like him in all these areas that were bodek l'kiddushin, l'gerushin, l'chalitza, l'miun, and l'mkorban echse aviv, ad ben esrim. New Mishnah. Until now, before we, I have to preface this Mishnah with saying that now we're going to see a totally different shita. We learned until now that divrei shchiv mira kichtuvim uchim surin damu, that as soon as you say it, it's as if it's a done deal and you don't need a kinyan or anything. Comes this Mishnah and says Rabbi Elazar disagrees. Hamechalek nechasav al piv, someone who divides up his possessions verbally. Rabbi Elazar omer echa bari. Be'echa mesukan. Mesukan is just another word for a shchiv mera. It means he might die. Nechasim sheyesh lam achrayut niknim bekesef ubishtar ubechazaka. If he's giving away land, it's only nikneh with money, with a shtar, or with a chazaka, that someone has to go in and actually use the property. Meaning, divrei shchiv mera are na kechtu v'nuchum mesurin dami. The only way to give away your possessions is with an actual kinyan. B'she'en lehem achrayut, if you're talking about metaltalin, ein niknim ela b'mishicha. Okay? You need to do a kinyan mishicha when it comes to metaltalin. Right? This is basically the same Mishnah we had in Kiddushin about what's acquired by what. But the main difference is that we're saying here that even if you're mesukan, he basically doesn't hold this thing, oh, we're worried that the dead person's going to be, you know, the person on his sickbed is going to get all worked up that you won't let him do give away his possessions and it might make him even sicker. He's not concerned for that, Takana Chachamim, and he says you actually have to do a kinyan.
Can I ask a question? Yeah. I'm so sorry, but
nope.
Like in terms of the structure of
the Mishnah,
why didn't they mention this earlier?
It is very striking, your question. Which is, yes, we've been learning this all along. So it's not a question on the Gemara. It's really a question on the Mishnah. Okay? But you have to really, to answer that question, you have to go back. We've had a lot of Gemaras until now. So I guess the first question really should be asked, why didn't the Gemara bring this up at all in their discussions? Okay? If you think about it, we're not so far away from the original Mishnah. So we started with the Mishnah that said, "Shchiv mira shekatav kol nechasav la'achirim v'shir karko koshu matanato matana," right? Matanato kayemet v'lo shir karko koshu ein matanato kayemet, right? That's where we started with this, and then the next Mishnah was the Mishnah that says was the one we were just dealing with. Right, as far as I can tell, there's no Mishnayot in between. The next Mishnah is Lo Katav La Shchiv Mera. If you didn't say I'm a Shchiv Mera, how do you deal with it? Right, and that was what we were dealing with yesterday about is it, right, do we say who has to bring the burden of proof? And now they're telling us that, by the way, there's someone who disagrees with all of this. It is a little strange because generally the Mishnah will kind of bring it up next to each other. So I agree that there's a good question here. I don't have an answer for it. I also thought that it was quite strange that we just bring it up now. And the next mission is going to continue with different views about this whole issue. Amrulo ma'aseh bi'iman shalbanei. It also could be that they didn't take his opinion so seriously, so they're kind of mentioning it later, right? That as everyone, and it could be that's why the Gemara didn't bring it up, because he's a da'at yachid that we don't hold by. So it didn't, even though the Gemara is constantly bringing up de'ot yachid, but I think they marginalized him. They didn't see him as a central.
It's a strong issue that you can accept
it is
the oral
right.
declaration of extremism.
Yes, it is a strong issue. So, yeah.
Because sometimes the Gemara mentions Mishnayot.
Yeah, no, they often mention Mishnayot, right. But they didn't, I think they, it wasn't, they knew they didn't hold by it, so they kind of, that's what I'm assuming. Amrulo, so now they say to him, Ma'aseh bi'iman shel b'nei Rochel, we saw this case, the mother of the sons of Rochel, Shaita chola, she was sick, v'amra, on her deathbed, she said, Tnu kivinti libiti, give my brooch to my daughter, v'hi b'shnei masar mana, and it was worth 1,200 maneh, or 1,200 zuzim, I should say, right? 12 maneh, which is 1,200 zuzim. Umeita, and she died. Vikimu et vareha, and that was by words alone. There was no shtar, there was no kinyan, there was no nothing. So what does he say? Amar lahen, b'nei rochel tikberem imam. Okay, the b'nei rochel are, you know, it's what happened here. The b'nei rochel lost out, right? By him saying, by the psak being that the girl gets the brooch, it means that the brothers, right, the sons of Rochel, get less of the inheritance. Because if we basically say you had to have done a kinyan and that doesn't work, then what would we say? We'd say she doesn't get it and the sons get everything. So he says, in this case, we don't really care about the sons. We're happy to give the brooch to the girl because the sons of B'nai Rochel, their mother should bury them. They're terrible people and they should be buried by their mother. Okay, meaning, right, that they should predecease their...
Which didn't happen.
Right, which didn't happen.
And they did give her the brooch, so...
Right, and they gave her the brooch, and... but what he's basically saying is, I don't really care about them, you know, halavai, that their mother should bury them. And therefore, that's the reason, okay, you can see in the Rashbam, even says, dekansum rabbanam l'kayem matanat iman l'bita b'lo kinyan. In other words, really, in a regular case, they shouldn't have given the brooch to the daughter. But this was a knas to the sons to punish them because they were bad people. Now, you can imagine, right, what are your thoughts about bad people, right? They were killers, they were robbing people. Okay, you're going to be surprised to see what the Gemara actually attributes to them, what their issue is.
I would have thought it would also be, Rachel would be a bad person because... Because you should bury your children.
Right. It's a punishment to the mother if she buries her children, right? It's a weird kind of curse because it's focused on the mother, even though, right, which is weird. But again, she's dead, so maybe he's not as concerned what he says about it, right? It's safer to say.
It's also not answering the question.
Well, it's answering the question because what he's saying is normally, if this wasn't the B'nai Rochel, they never would have given the brooch to the daughter because there was no kinyan. Now, the reason the Gemara is going to have to go to come up with what this answer is, we're going to have to find something. Obviously, the Chachamim didn't think the B'nai Rochel were Rishaim. They didn't view the story the way he did. So we're going to have to find something where they did something wrong. That's why it's not going to be robbery or death or, you know, murderers or something like that, because it's going to be where they did something wrong that he thinks is wrong and they think is not wrong. Okay, so we're going to have to find some machloket, Rabbi Elazar v'Chachamim, on some issue, and that must be what they're Rishaim about. Okay, you're going to be a little surprised by what they choose. It's not the typical thing you would have thought. Okay, we'll have to wait a little bit in suspense till we get there. Gemara starts, Tanya. They quote a braita. Amar lahem Rabbi Elazar l'chachamim. Okay, there's a whole thing for the rest of the sugya about is it Rabbi Eliezer, is it Rabbi Elazar? Okay, the Mishnah said Rabbi Elazar, and then we're going to assume that this is Rabbi Elazar also. Rabbi Elazar says to chachamim, Maaseh b'Meroni echad shayah b'Yerushalayim. Meroni, there's different debate. In Kiddushin, it comes up as Madoni echad from Madon or Meroni from Meron. Different options. Anyway, not our issue so much. Maaseh b'Meroni echad shayah b'Yerushalayim v'ayulo metaltalin harbe. He was living in Jerusalem. He had tons of possessions, metaltalin. Ubikesh litnam b'matana, and he was lying on his deathbed and he wanted to give them away to people. But what's the problem, right? Rabbi Elazar is bringing this case. According to him, what do you have to do? You have to do a kinyan. So what's he going to say? Amru lo, he was told, ein lehem takana ad shikneh al gav karka. Right? He can't give away all these possessions just by saying, I want to give to this person that, I want to give to this person that, but he has to be kone kinyan agav. We've seen this many times. If you have all these possessions, you want to give them away, and what's the point? He's on his deathbed. His metaltalin aren't with him, and the people aren't necessarily with him, so what does he have to do? He is makne to the people land. They have to acquire the land somehow. And when they acquire that land, then what can he do? He can say, I'm giving you all these metaltalin with that land. And not only does he have to, and that he has to be makne to a person, but he can be makne to anyone on behalf of other people, because we've learned, zachin la'adam shalo b'panav. So he can say, I'm giving this one person this little piece of land. He just needs one person and a piece of land, and he can give away everything based on that. So, halach, what did he do? Halach v'lakach beit sele echad. He went and bought the cheapest land. What's the cheapest land? Rock. It's hard, rocky land where it can't plant anything there. So we took a Beit Sele Echad, Samuch LiYerushalayim. There's a little bit of a question. Why wasn't it in Yerushalayim? Why was it out of Yerushalayim? But anyway, he tried to find something close by. V'amar, and he said, Tzvono L'ploni, V'imo Me'atzon, U'me'a Chaviyot. Okay, so the northern part of this piece of land goes to so-and-so, and he did some sort of a kinyan with someone on it. And with it will go 100 son and 100 chaviot, barrels. Udromo leploni, and the south part of this piece of property will go to so-and-so. Vimo matzon u chaviot. Right? You can imagine, right, whether this was everything or maybe it goes on and you get the idea. Vikimu chachamim etvarav. So what does he say? Look, Rabbi Elazar says, look at this story. It proves exactly my case. If you guys were right, he could have just sat on his deathbed and told everybody who he's giving everything to. But here you see he had to go out of his way while he was on his deathbed to buy a piece of property, not even in Yerushalayim, right? Outside of Yerushalayim, go buy this property and be machne, etc. Amrulo, mishamra, yeah? You want to prove it from this guy? Mironi barihaya. It's true he died right after he did this, but he was healthy at the time that he did this. And this was a matnat bari, and it wasn't a matnat shchimera. It doesn't say in the beginning of the story that he was sick. It just says he was in Yerushalayim, and he had a lot of metaltalin, and he wanted to give them away. Okay, so there's a debate about what the facts of the story were. Was he sick when he did this, or was he not? Okay, back to this B'nai Rochel now. Amar lehen B'nai Rochel, tik barei miman, right? Their mother should bury them. My time akalayet lehu. For what reason did he curse them? Amar of Yudah, Amar Shmuel, Mikaimei Kotzim Bikarem Hayu. It was Kilea Kerem. If you remember Kilea Kerem, what is it? When two things are growing and right, when things are growing in the vineyard together, either you plant them together or they grow and you don't remove them. So there were Kotzim, that they were Mikaimei, meaning thorny bushes grew in their fields. And they didn't take out the thorns. And the thorns were combined with the vines. And it was creating a situation of Kilea Karen. For Rabbi Elazar leta'ameh, again, you have to change this to Elazar. Ditnan ha-mikayem kotzim bikerem. Rabbi Elazar omer kidesh. V'chachamim omrim lo kidesh. If you remember what kidesh means it's a problem. Right? Because what happens? Why kidesh? Because if you keep the kilayim together, they become asur b'hana'ah. So they call that kidesh. Okay, it comes from the pasuk. The pasuk in kilayim talks about kadesha. I forget the exact words, but it uses the word kadesh in the context of kilayim. So that's why they talk about it in the context of kidesh. So here we have it. Like I told you, we're going to have to find something that Rabbi Elazar and Chachamim debate. Rabbi Elazar think that leaving your kotzim is dafka a problem. And Chachamim say it's not a problem. Why? So, Chachamim omrim lo kidesh, ela davar shekamo mekaimin. In other words, nobody eats thorns, right? You're only chayavin kilayim when it's something that people want to grow. Nobody wants to grow thorns, and therefore it's not an issue of kilayim. So now, Rabbi Elazar shita is really lamuvenet, right? Why, if you keep kotzim, will it be good? So there's a bit of a issue with the nusach, and maybe it doesn't really say this, or maybe it talked about karkom before, because why all of a sudden we bring up this saffron, but we'll read it like this, which is bishlama karkom chaze. We can understand that maybe what they're saying is, we can understand if what was growing there was saffron. Then we could see that it would be kilea karen. They're just bringing it as an example of something that people would eat. Ela kotzim l'may chazeh. Why does Rabbi Elazar think that this is a problem? For what are kotzim ruin for, right? We all think of thorns as just a bad thing. Amar Rabbi Chanina, my time, to Rabbi Elazar, shekem ba'aravya mikaimim kotzim basadot ligmalehen. Apparently they used it as fodder for the camels. Okay, I don't know exactly how, but they use these thorny bushes somehow as fodder for the camels, and therefore there are certain areas where people leave kotzim in the field. And the basic debate between Rabbi Elazar and Chachamim is, if we have something that in a minority of places people would keep in their fields, so do we say that in anybody's field now we're going to consider that kilayim? Or Chachamim say, no, if you don't use it, then it's not going to be considered kilayim, even if there's a minority of people who actually have a purpose for using this. Okay, last line in this Gemara. Amar Rabbi Levi, konim kinyan mishchiv mera, afilu b'shabbat. Okay, now if we're going according to Rabbi Elazar and you need a kinyan, so we say that we're going to allow a kinyan from a mishchiv mera even on Shabbat. V'lo lachush l'divrei Rabbi Eliezer, or Rabbi Elazar here, right? According to this, it's also Rabbi Elazar. Ela shema titrof da'ato alav. One second. Lachush, mashakani alav. Right, so now we're saying, he's saying, it's not that I'm concerned for Divrei Rabbi Elazar. Saying, don't think that I'm saying this because of Rabbi Elazar, who needs a kinyan. He's saying that sometimes someone on their deathbed might actually want to do a kinyan to make sure that it goes through properly, and we allow that to be done even on Shabbat. And now, this seems strange, right? How could you do a kinyan on Shabbat? Right? It seems weird. How are you allowed to do a kinyan on Shabbat? Okay, so first of all, the Rashbam says, Konim mishchiv mera afilu b'Shabbat. Okay, if you look in the Rashbam there, he says, Lo shna hechad shetzarich kinyan, kigon shashir. Okay, we're not even talking about a matana, right? That, let's say you don't give all your possessions. Lo shna b'mechalei kol nechasav. And why is that? Because no matter what, if you're on your deathbed, whether you're giving away part of your possessions or you're giving away some of your possessions, this goes back to the fact that we had this third category of that you're giving away machmat mita because you assume you're going to die, and therefore we're worried. Shema titrof da'ato alav, right? Because you're worried it's not going. Maybe people won't keep your will, and therefore we allow even b'Shabbat for you to do this. Okay, so even though speech is enough, and almost maybe this is why kinyan is allowed, because the kinyan is not even so much ma'uti. Right, the kinyan is symbolic. By the way, what kind of kinyan are we talking about? A kinyan chalipin. Right, the assumption is we're doing a handkerchief kind of sale here, and we basically allow him even on Shabbat to do this, and we see how far the rabbis go. And maybe they're ending in this Mishnah with this line to show that we don't agree with Rabbi Elazar, that we're not concerned, but we're very concerned with the dead person's or the person on his deathbed's mental health, and we don't want him to die right there on the bed just because we're not allowing. We don't want to be responsible for his death, basically. So because of that, we're going to allow even a kinyan on Shabbat. Okay, and with this, it's going to be a lead into the next Mishnah, which has a whole machloket about how we treat Shabbat versus Chol. So the next Mishnah we're going to read, and then we're going to find out when we get to the Gemara that there's two totally different readings about this machloket. Okay, so one is the version we see in our Mishnah, and after that, we're going to see there's another version. Okay, so the version we're reading, this happens often, not often, but it does happen, where later Tanaim, okay, there's going to be a Tanaitic debate about what these Tanaim thought. So it's when there's one generation of Tanaim, and the later generation of Tanaim says, actually, there's a machloket about what their machloket was about to begin with. So the version we're getting in our Mishnah is only one version. According to the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer, again, there's a bit of a debate, is this Rabbi Elazar or not? Okay, here I'm going to read him as Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer Omer b'Shabbat dvarav kayamim mipnei she'ein yachol lichtov. On Shabbat, we allow him, if he basically says, I'm giving away my possessions to him and to him and to him, right? Normally we don't do business dealings on Shabbat. But since he's not allowed to write, therefore we allow him to speak and we accept his words. There's a big debate. If this is Rabbi Elazar, then it basically means that Rabbi Elazar says, generally we don't allow words, but we allow words on Shabbat. But if it's not Rabbi Elazar, then it's not necessarily connected. Aval lo b'chol. But on Chol, so now what we're going to see is if we assume this is Rabbi Eliezer, let's just go with that assumption. We had Rabbi Eliezer in the previous Mishnah who said, Divrei Shchima aren't Tichtuvim Chumasurim. You need to actually do a Kinyan. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it depends what day of the week you are. On Shabbat, it's enough to just say it because you don't have an opportunity to write it. On Chol, you have to write it. Okay? That would be his approach. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, B'Shabbat Amru, Kavachomer B'Chol. If you allow someone to actually do this type of kinyan, this type of, not a kinyan, but without a kinyan, just say, I want to give this money to so-and-so, 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 and that's a day that we don't generally allow business dealings to be done. So if we're going to allow that kind of business dealing, then obviously we're going to allow b'chol. Okay, so two opposite approaches, right? Do we say it's unique to Shabbat because you can't write it, but when you can write it, you should write it? Versus Rabbi Yeshua holds, no, once we allow this on Shabbat, so kavachomer we can allow this b'chol. And Kayotze Bo, we're going to have another similar machloket about the idea about if we allow something on Shabbat, then Kavachomer we can allow Bechol. So this isn't going to have to do with Shabbat, it's going to have to do with something else. Kayotze Bo, they have the same machloket and a different issue. Zachin lekatan ve'ein zachin legadol. Remember we talked about zachin la'adam shelo b'fanav. So we explained that it's everybody, right? It's so now, according to this, you can only be zocheh for a katan. Why? Because he can't do it himself. It's the same thing as you can give away your property in words on Shabbat, but not write them only because you can't write them on Shabbat. But if you could write them, then you can't do it in this way. So likewise, if I'm going to give you a gift, I can't give it through someone else. And as soon as I give it to them, I say, accept this on behalf, right? I say to Ruth, accept this on behalf of Donna. Because if I say that, so it's true, you can give it to Donna, but it's not Donna's until Donna gets it, according to this, because she's a gadol, a gadola, and therefore, since she could do it herself, it's only when I give it to her, when it actually reaches her, that it's going to be hers. But if Donna was a katan, and she can't be zoche herself, so we have to have somebody zoche for her, so then if I give it to Ruth on behalf of Donna, then it would be allowed. So that's zochin lekatan, ve'ein zochin legadol, devar Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yoshua Amer leKatan Amru. If you're allowed to be zocheh for a katan who can't even do it themselves, then kal v'chomer leGadol. Okay, that's the first reading of the Mishnah. So matnitim mane. So now they say, who's this Mishnah according to? This Mishnah is all according to Rabbi Yehuda's understanding. Rabbi Yehuda, Titania, Rabbi Meir Omer. So now we're going to learn Rabbi Meir Shita and then Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is going to be exactly the way we saw in the Mishnah, but Rabbi Meir thinks the machloket is different. Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Eliezer Omer bechol dvarav kayamim. Mipnei she'achol lichtov, aval lo b'Shabbat. Dafka Rabbi Eliezer says like this, you can't give away your stuff on Shabbat. You're only allowed to give it away on Chol. Because on Chol, since you can write, therefore, if we say divrei shchivim ha'kichtuv v'chim esurin dami, it means it's as if you wrote it. So therefore, you can't do it on Shabbat, because on Shabbat you can't write. So therefore, you don't have the power to then give it away in words. Whereas b'chol, since you're allowed to write, we're allowing you in place of writing to pass it on in words. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, b'chol amru, kavachomer l'shabbat. If we allow you to do it on Chol, when you're allowed to write it, and we allow you, where you have an alternative, right? Here's the alternative. Since an alternative exists, right? Kavachomer, when no alternative exists on Shabbat, can't write it, then obviously, remember, what are we worried? That he's going to be bahul, right, and get all worked up. You're going to leave him stuck on Shabbat, that he's stuck. If the guy dies on Shabbat, he's not going to be able to give away his possessions. Of course we're going to allow it. Kayotze bo, zachin legadol ve'en zachin lekatan, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Right? You can be zocheh for a gadol, but you can't be zocheh for a katan, according to Rabbi Eliezer, because a katan is not bar kinyan. So therefore, I can't accept something on behalf of someone who can't accept something for themselves. And Rabbi Yeshua Omer, what do you mean? You missed the point. Bigadol amru, kavachomer lekatan. Right? If we say it by someone who can do it themselves and we allow you to do it, obviously you can do it to help someone else who can't, who isn't allowed to do it at all. So that's Rabbi Meir's view of the machloket, which is totally different than Rabbi Yehuda's version. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, this is now just review of our Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, b'Shabbat v'rav kayamim b'pnei she'eino yachol lichtov, aval lo b'chol. Right? Basically, their shitot are somewhat flipped, according to this. Rabbi Lezer's logic is, on Shabbat we allow it because he's not allowed to write, but not b'chol. Rabbi Yeshua Omer b'Shabbat Amru Kavachomer b'Chol. Right, since they allow it on Shabbat, all the more so. On a day when it's easier and you're allowed to write, all the more so we should allow it. Kayotze b'zachin lekatan ve'in zachin legadol. Tiver Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua Omer lekatan Amru Kavachomer legadol. Okay, so two versions about what they argue about and the logic behind it.
And no resolution.
And no resolution as to what they actually said.